Bishop. You're listening to your community radio station, KBOO Portland, Oregon, at 90.7 FM. Today is Tuesday, July 28th, 2009. And this is Air Cascadia, long on content, short on time. I'm Chris Andre.
And I'm Liam Delta.
The proposed water filtration facility looks more and more like the first glimmer of privatization.
Coos Bay, with one hand behind its back, welcomes wave energy with the other.
And we all know what's in the hand behind the back. It's LNG, right?
Mm.
And, of course, today is Leonard Peltier's parole hearing.
Portland area weather, even hotter than yesterday, in the triple digits in most places. Lows in the 70s tonight, and then the cooling trend will start Thursday.
And first we go to regional news from around Cascadia. Cryptosporidium or no, the proposed $400 million treatment plant looming over our own Bull Run water is the first shot fired in the coming local water wars. Whatever else the plan represents, the issue underlying it really is privatization of water. Of course, we know that the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency has an edict that Portland has to build a plant to treat its drinking water. That's what is presented as the motivating factor. Joining us this morning is Floyd Jones with Friends of the Reservoirs. Good morning, Floyd. Thanks for being with us.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on the show.
Well, today is, of course, well, the City Council meeting tomorrow, and the various proposals are going to be laid out on the table for all to see. How do you approach this? What's your take on the City Council meeting and the filtration plant proposals?
Well, we oppose this resolution on every level. We absolutely oppose the construction of a Bull Run filtration plant. There's no public health issue whatsoever with our pure Bull Run water. Everyone agrees on that, all public health officials, City Council, all environmental groups. We all agree that there are no public health issues. This was a negotiated regulation. Most people don't know that. It was a negotiated rulemaking process. And unfortunately, our own Water Bureau participated in that, and they brought along a corporation who's been on retainer with the Water Bureau for the last 20 years, a corporation who's been pushing for a Bull Run treatment plant since the 1980s. And on June 23rd, when the Water Bureau gave their presentation to City Council, they pulled out a 7-year-old Bull Run treatment panel process. And that process was wholly controlled by a corporation, Montgomery Watson Harza, the same global, the same corporation that the Portland Water Bureau brought with them to negotiate both this current rule, the long-term 2 enhanced surface water rule, and its predecessor. And so there's much dated information in this panel process. The panel process itself is tainted as a result of having the corporation involved in the process. So on Wednesday, what City Council is going to be voting on is this resolution that the Water Bureau and Commissioner Leonard is proposing that we, as a way to comply with this rule, that we build a filtration plant. There are other options.
So it really does rather look as though there is some collaboration or at least some serious conversations have taken place between federal agencies and private corporate interests.
Well, with regard to this rule, other organizations around the nation, there were a lot of significant comments made to this against this regulation. It's flawed at every level as well. And many of these other organizations commented on the ethical aspect of having chemical suppliers, the corporation who that held a patent for the UV technology, which is the technology that most systems around the nation are going to be installing to address this regulation, and then sitting on the EPA's Science Advisory Board Drinking Water Committee, providing quality control over the science of this rule, was Montgomery Watson Harza Global's 32-year CEO, Rhodes Trussell. So,
wait, Floyd, what you're saying is, what you just said, let's just clarify this so that we know someone from the private company that wants to develop the filtration plant is part of the EPA's drinking water?
They were. There was a negotiation period for this regulation, and it took place over a couple of years in 2000, or, 2000, 2001, and serving on the EPA Science Advisory Board Drinking Water Committee, overseeing supervision of this rule, yes, was this same corporation, a 32-year veteran, Rhodes Trussell is his name. So you had the same corporation on both sides of the table. It was on the EPA side, and then unfortunately, unbeknownst to the citizens of Portland, he was that same corporation, the local, the regional president, was brought back in the negotiation.
Well, it's beknownst now, isn't it?
Pardon me?
It's known now to the people of Portland. Well, Chloe, thank you so much for that. That's all we have time for. We'd like to get an update on the results of the city council meeting and what goes on there tomorrow. Thank you so much for that. My guest has been Floyd Jones with Friends of the Reservoir.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Coos County officials want it both ways, apparently. On the one hand, a shiny green image would be nice, so the town is considering wave energy projects. On the other hand, the Texas Natural Gas corporate bullies are arrayed behind a bristling phalanx of legal guns, ready to bring in the ultimate Trojan horse, liquefied natural gas. This September, Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife marine biologist Kristen Dawn will discuss wave energy development at the DFW Fish Conference. Or as the AP puts it, quote, as the United States looks for ways to reduce its dependence on fossil fuels, the Oregon coast is gaining more attention as a potential source of renewable energy. Yeah, right, except when it's not.
On Air Cascadia, we bring what appears to be a constant stream of bad news about Oregon's liquefied natural gas future. And we do this because, of course, the stories are just pouring in all the time. Today, however, Livia Schmidt is back with us to talk a bit about some of the things, some of the solutions, some of the events that you can participate in that answer the question, but what can I do? Good morning, Olivia. Thanks for being back with us today.
Thanks for having me, Chris.
So we're talking solutions today.
Yeah. You know, we have a lot of bad news to bring to the LNG story almost every day, but that's always countered, of course, with the passion and enthusiasm of the anti-LNG community, which is thousands across Oregon fighting the proposals. Folks who are less informed about these proposals have an opportunity to get a firsthand look at some of these sites in the next coming months. August 16th, the Sierra Club will be hosting a trip to a site on the Palomar line in Mount Hood. BARC, a local group that does watchdogging on Mount Hood, has historically hosted many wonderful hikes on the Palomar pipeline in Mount Hood, and they're continuing to do that, and I encourage folks to check out bark-out.org to see other events that may be happening. On August 16th, the Sierra Club will be leading its first visit to a Palomar pipeline site on Mount Hood. We'll be leaving from the Sierra Club office at 1821 Southeast Ankeny on August 16th around 10 a.m. in the morning. I'm just posting that event to the KBOO calendar so folks can go there for more information. Later on September 12th, we're actually hosting a day trip to the Bradwood Landing site on the Lower Columbia River estuary. Local impacted community members on Puget Island, just across the Clifton Channel from the Bradwood site, will be hosting a midday picnic and informational meeting. We'll give information about what's proposed. People will have an opportunity to talk with impacted community members, leaders in the anti-LNG campaign. That should be a really fun event, and I can't tell you enough about how incredibly beautiful the Bradwood Landing site is. That is private property. We won't be going onto the site, but we'll be able to see it from just about 1,000 feet across the river, and we'll be preparing motorboat shuttles to take people close up to the site. And then in August, on August 22nd, the group Oregon Citizens Against the Pipelines, which has been a grassroots organization across Oregon fighting the pipeline proposals, is hosting a fundraiser for the Anti-LNG Coalition. You can find out information about that event by going to the Columbia Riverkeeper website, columbiariverkeeper.org, and click on their events calendar, and you'll find the Montanor Vineyard event there. It's a great event. It's our second annual event. It's an auction and a wine tasting. The proceeds go to the anti-LNG fund housed under Columbia Riverkeeper. So there's opportunity for folks to get more information, get involved, see these beautiful areas, talk with impacted landowners, meet people who are leading the campaigns, and I encourage folks to attend those events.
So there you go, listeners. We do have some solutions here, some things that you can actually do to impact your environment in a positive way. Thank you so much for that. My guest has been Olivia Schmidt with Columbia River Keeper.
Thank you, Chris.
When temperatures go up or down too much, so do energy bills. But consumers forget that climate is an intrinsic part of where we live and who we are. In other corners of the world, people seem to have come to terms with it. But not us. We see it as our God-given right to be kept at a perfect, comfortable temperature all year round. So while the region broke heat records yesterday, PGE customers beat their most recent all-time high by using nearly 4,000 megawatts of juice, all in the name of staying cool. Summer affective disorder.
Oh, this one would appear on the surface to be an environmental story, but it's coming from the Oregonian, so it's actually a media story. The Oregonian, the region's newspaper of record, has published what appears to be an editorial masquerading as a news piece, asserting that old-growth logging is a rare occurrence. The Elliott Free State Action, and that was barely mentioned, nor are the actual numbers of timber sales that are an ongoing blight. Roads and roadless areas, upland access remote places where so-called waste is being harvested to fuel the projected biomass industry of the future. The picture is grim, and no amount of greenwash is going to brighten it. This sort of smokescreen paraded as journalism contributes nothing to public understanding of what is really at stake. We are trying to reach Jasmine Simmer-Stuckey with Forest Defense this morning. She very likely is, in fact, out in the forest. Looks like we're not going to be able to bring her online today. We'll be talking with her later about her reaction to this astounding statement.
Sometimes nature has other plans for the theoretically secure areas where we go to clean up our own deadly messes. Firefighters are fighting a range fire at the south end of the Umatilla Chemical Depot in northeast Oregon. Depot officials say the fire is not close to the area where chemical weapons are stored. Well, that's a relief.
But it could be.
It will be someday.
Okay, here's what green schools have to offer. Vast savings in healthcare costs over the long term. Vast savings in mitigating effects of climate change over the long term. Vast contribution toward creating a generation with the principles of sustainability built in. Then what are we waiting for? The problem is that as Americans, we can't see further than the next paycheck, the next legislative session, the next stimulus package. So Oregon school districts remain cautious about building green schools. Of the 27 new schools approved by Oregon voters in 2006, only about one in four have been or will be built to national green standards. When will we ever learn?
Leonard Peltier has been in prison for over 33 years. He'll have his first full parole hearing since 1993 in Lewisburg, Pennsylvania today. And all around the world, prayer vigils are being held to raise attention to his plight. Today's hearing will be the best opportunity Peltier will get during his entire period of incarceration to a fair review of his case before the U.S. Parole Commission. And after this broadcast on Flashpoints, Dennis Bernstein will have an update on the case that was recorded last night.
And finally, the guy that the Willamette Week loved to hate, the former Multnomah County prosecutor Randy Richardson, has been sentenced to 2 years in 2 years in prison. He was a talented, charming, and misguided fellow. Richardson was convicted of stealing, as the media would define it, a dying woman's house. His apology, it's true, rang a little hollow. No one set out to hurt you. But failure to take personal responsibility is the American way when it comes to contrition. The real facts in Richardson's case are perhaps murky. But as history proves, white power structures are uncomfortable with black success. Race, it's the final frontier.
This has been Air Cascadia for Tuesday, July 28th, 2009. Today's editor is Chris Andre. Engineering is Janet Anderson. The KBOO Interim AM News and Public Affairs Director is Trillium Shannon, in for Kathleen Stevenson on sabbatical. I'm Liam Delta.
And I'm Chris Andre. You're listening to member-supported KBOO Portland, your community radio station at 90.7 FM. Your support, and your support only, keeps us subverting the dominant paradigm. Thank you so much, members.
Coming up next on Flashpoints, Dennis Bernstein talks to Berta Oliva from the Committee of Family Members of the Disappeared in Honduras, and he'll have an update on the Leonard Peltier case that was recorded last night.
Thanks for listening, and have a good day.